What is your killer strategy? The one that gives your business the ultimate bulletproof competitive advantage. Welcome to Your Advantage Play with your host, Joel Block. Former professional blackjack player and card counter who left Las Vegas and spent his life in that giant casino on Wall Street in the hedge fund and venture capital businesses. And now, here's your host, Joel Block.
How do you drive growth in a mature industry, especially when the company itself is mature and maybe even a little further along than that? The trick seems to be innovation, but that's a broad concept. So to fine-tune the strategy, we welcome Ordan Trabelsi. Ordan, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Joel.
Hey, man. So I actually was quite surprised to hear what you guys are doing. This is a fascinating topic. I think people are going to love this. Tell us real quick, what is it that that your company does?
Great. So we offer technology in the offender monitoring space to disrupt the criminal justice industry.
Essentially, okay, just so people are clear, offender monitoring. Yeah. These are criminals that the government needs to keep an eye on them somehow, and you're helping them keep an eye on these people.
Right. Convicted criminals or potential criminals that have committed some sort of behavior activity, and they need to be monitored. And rather than put everyone in prison, which is very expensive and also doesn't help people reenter society, this is part of the process of them reentering society and fixing up their wrongs and integrating back into our communities.
So is this like for parolees also? People on parole have to be tracked also?
Yeah, people on parole, there's after you finish your criminal sentence, 6 months at the end, you'll be monitored. And there's also for programs that haven't existed before that we just created, which like new innovations like domestic violence. If you have a restraining order these days, it doesn't help you so much because nobody knows if the offender is coming close to the victim. With our technology, once someone hits a family member and the police come and see that and they see signs, we could put one of our unique lightweight bracelets with long-term battery life on that offender. And he wears it underneath a sock, doesn't change his life in any way, but he can't come close to the victim.
So they're ankle bracelets, but they don't have that giant box on them. I was wondering how people sleep with those giant boxes on them, you know?
Yeah, so those are the old brick bracelets where you can imagine very uncomfortable, very heavy. You also have to charge your leg. You have to connect your leg to the wall every day like you're a robot for an hour or two to charge it. If you don't connect your leg, it's off and you're off the program. With our technology, the architecture is different. You don't have to charge it for a year. So you never have to charge it throughout the program. It's lightweight. It's very seamless. It weighs less than your watch. And it's underneath your sock. You put it on, you kind of forget about it so long as you're following the program requirements, like staying away from the victim, the wife that you had a potential encounter with.
So beside that, the thing is very small. And beside the thing has very good battery life. Is there anything really different about this than like the old ones? I mean, did you make any breakthroughs that made it better or different?
Yeah, actually, we've innovated almost every one of the, let's call it, verticals that are required. I mean, when you're tracking someone in the city, it's very hard because of the noise that jumps off the building. So you had a hard time monitoring a city like Manhattan. You couldn't monitor underground. You couldn't monitor within buildings and multiple floors. We've overcome all those challenges. We integrate also with Wi-Fi networks, with GNSS, satellite systems, and other. And so basically in every program in the space, whether it's house arrest, GPS monitoring, alcohol monitoring, we could identify alcohol through the sweat through our bracelet.
Really?
We created a new technology and integrated with others in a way that allows the industry to disrupt. And that's how we, you know, in a way changed the industry, created brand new programs like our program in Romania, $33 million program. It's the first one in their country. And it's a program that we're helping up to 15,000 families per month with domestic violence.
So this, you know, like I know somebody that had an alcohol problem, got a DUI, and they installed this machine in his car. So every time he turns the car on, he has to breathe in this machine. So you're saying that this bracelet can tell if he's been drinking or maybe drinking too much, and he doesn't need to breathe into a machine potentially?
Yeah, the machine. Those machines are typically called ignition interlock. Now, we don't know what happens if your friend breathes into the machine for you. You know, that sometimes it's hard to identify. They have all these tricks, but it's still one person or another can overcome it. With a bracelet, it's harder to put a bracelet on someone's leg with transdermal alcohol monitoring, continuous, and that person can't take the bracelet off. And if he's been drinking, then we measure through the sweat that he's been drinking, and then he's off the program. So if someone has a DUI or two in California, their lawyers would typically ask for them to be on one of our programs. And if they can show that they've stopped drinking for a period of 60 or 90 days, they're typically successful and then can avoid a prison sentence.
Really? This is this is pretty extraordinary. I mean, I'm just, listen, this isn't my world, so I don't hear a lot about this. But this is, I mean, is this considered to be, you know, pretty top drawer? I mean, is this like a really new, innovative kind of thing? I mean, what in your world, where does this fall?
Yeah. Well, in the criminal justice industry in the past, technology was very outdated. You couldn't do domestic violence, for example, because the bracelet was too heavy and the woman had to carry a brick on her and nobody would carry it. Now with our solution, there's a lightweight bracelet. You don't need to be convicted to put it on. It's not very interruptive to your life. And the woman just carries a phone, typically the victim. And she doesn't have to install anything new or carry anything new. So we are able to disrupt the status quo and change a lot of programs that didn't work in the past. People have been trying to do electronic monitoring for over 30 years, but many of the times we ran into technological hurdles. Originally, you couldn't even track someone well because they're so inaccurate, the GPS points. But every year, there's more improvements, and we leverage smartphones from Samsung, technologies that are out there from vendors that create hundreds of millions of units every year. And by integrating with the top technology out there and putting out new bracelets, new technology, and new integrations with every project, we're able to be one step ahead of the curve and, as I said, disrupt the industry in fabulous ways.
Yeah, I'm freaked out by it because it's the idea that you can measure alcohol, measure this and that, that you can, does this, like if you're in Manhattan, let's say you're on the 42nd floor of a building, does it know you're on the 42nd floor? Does it only know where you are like on a grid, like on the street level?
So it depends what noise you'll have, but our technology, we could tell how high someone is. So you'll know that someone's around, the 40th floor versus someone was on the floor or on the floor level or someone who was very high up. And some people, especially in Manhattan, they live with track in their homes and they live in a certain area. So you want to make sure that they're actually in the building, in their home, not just in the building. Because then they could go down and go to, if someone's a sex offender and they need to stay in their house and they're in a huge building with thousands of people, it doesn't help just to track that they're in the building.
So it measures that they're within a 50-foot vertical range, for example.
Yeah. And we have beacons that we put into the apartment to make sure that they're actually in the apartment. We have a lot of different tools and technological advances to create the program more applicable to more people. Because the idea is you don't want to just put a small population of people on it. There's a high recidivism rate in the U.S. There's over 75% of people that commit crime and leave prison program, come back. And the prisons are inflating. There's overcrowding. There's problems. So the idea is to try to get more and more of these people, especially misdemeanors, on programs such as these to avoid just throwing them in prison. Whereas you can imagine throwing someone in prison sometimes makes them a bigger criminal rather than teaches them how to interact with society in a more positive and beneficial manner.
Actually, prison kind of makes people worse. I mean, that's a discussion for a different day, but I've talked to some district attorneys and prosecutors and every one of them to say people get worse because now their life is ruined. They don't know how to reintegrate back and it's really complicated. But let's shift gears for a second. Sure. Has this company always been in this business or is this a new thing for this company?
It's actually new. The company's been around for 35 years. And while we've been serving governments the whole time with identifications, passports, ID cards, driver's licenses, we had long RFP cycles and long government procurement cycles, but it's been in that industry of identification until, let's say, 5 or 6 years ago, we made a decision to shift away from developing countries, which is where we were working most of the time in South America and in Africa, to developed countries. And we looked into our technological portfolio and the stuff we're able to do well, and like RFID for long range tracking, we decided to shift and create full solutions that are targeted towards this industry, the tracking offender industry. It's a $2 billion industry. There's only 10 players. It's a niche market, high barriers to entry. It's the kind of market we like to enter. And we made a good call because since we made that shift, we're able to, you know, improve our performance, our financials, and our prospects significantly.
Yeah. So for 35 years, the company was doing passports and driver's licenses and doing different things. And you guys kind of fine tuned this into this new thing. And I imagine that the technologies of all those things, passports and driver's license, everything has changed anyway. So did you kind of get forced out of those businesses and forced into a decision about something else, or was it voluntary?
No, it was voluntary. We were still working on those businesses, but we just saw that the ROI on investment was smaller and the ability to take a market leading position was harder. There's very large players in the identification space, and a lot of the technologies becoming commoditized, like the biometric passports. You see they're pretty much standard with the iCal standard throughout the world. And you saw that what people were bidding on was mainly price and scale. Not a good place to be in if you're a small Israeli company. While we have operations also in the US, we've expanded since. Our position today in this industry is much more opportunistic. We have a much bigger potential to expand into leading positions in various markets. And if you look at Europe, for example, where we started off with small projects for $100,000, $200,000 in size. Now we're winning projects that are $5, $7, and even $30+ million in size. And that just shows how, you know, sometimes the market dynamics and the industry have to match your offering so you can make you know, a disruptive change in the industry and also for your company.
Hey, let me ask take a quick little detour here. So you're an Israeli company and you're in Israel now. Is that right?
Yes.
Near Tel Aviv. Why is it that Tel Aviv does such a good job in developing new technologies? And we have Silicon Valley and now they're spreading. There's Silicon, different things. There's Silicon Beach in Los Angeles and there's in New York and they have different places. But how did you guys get up and running? Because I remember the first deal I really remember hearing was that Google bought Waze for $1 billion. That was the first $1 billion deal in Israel. And that was about 15 years ago. What do you think it is?
There's a lot of reasons that, you know, there's a lot of books also. They call it Israel Startup Nation. I was in the military in cybersecurity, and a lot of my colleagues were as well. And I think there's just like in many other places around the world, there's kind of like a breeding ground where people in the military, because of the situation of Israel in the world and geopolitical and the risk that it faces with its environment, we always have to stay one step ahead with technology to make sure that we're protecting our lives. And, you know, that breeds great technology. And from a very young age, at the age of 18, people are learning this stuff. So when they come out of the military after 3, 5, 7, 10 years, they're usually swallowed up by research centers of large corporations from the US and around the world. And those centers like Intel or Google or Apple, they're here in Israel. And as people go into the centers and learn, and then they help guide the future generations. That together with just the Israeli mentality that people kind of hear for a very long time, like the concept of having an exit, like a startup and a quick exit. We like to move fast, do things fast, very, very innovative in culture and disruptive. It created this breeding ground, which Tel Aviv is the center of it, but also other places in Israel are very startup and tech focused and tech oriented. So there's places to learn. There's good places to get experience. There's good companies here, and it looks like for the foreseeable future, so long as funds will keep streaming into Israel, as we've seen, looks like that won't change. It could potentially only increase.
You know, it's interesting because you know, you get excellent training in the military, which is and that happens in the United States too, and that happens in lots of other countries. But for whatever reason, in a lot of these other countries, they're not commercializing and doing it for capitalistic profit. They're doing it for cybercrime and for some other nefarious kinds of purposes. So it just it's a different culture, I guess.
A lot of people in the military deal with defense of cyber. And when they come out, they can't always use the same capabilities and same exact skills, but they're transferable skills, technology and understanding operating systems and embedded hardware and software and just, you know, the proper design of stable, long-term, resilient technology products. Learning that is what helps people here and their companies create great products.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about this. Let's go back. We'll go back on the path we were on before. But what's the history of your company? So you started 35 years ago. They were doing passports and stuff. How did you get involved in this company? And you know, who directed the hard right turn into the criminal justice activities?
So the company has been around since 1988. And for a while, they've been doing various projects and raising capital in various different markets throughout the world. Around 2010, they were on the pink sheets in the U.S. because of financial crisis. It was hard on the company. We came in. We had a deal to come to the company through the debt and equity conversion. My family, me and a few other partners from the family and outside the family. And back in 2013, I was finishing my MBA at Columbia, and we listed on NASDAQ Capital Market, raised $14 million, acquired a competitor of ours, then raised more money, acquired other competitors. And through acquisition of six or so players over the years, we were able to merge the company into create what it is today, which has not only company what it is today, which is not only the identification abilities, but also cybersecurity technology. And also, so as I was saying, these acquisitions and integration of them helped improve our margins, but also helped improve our business standing and proposition, not only from identification to also doing cybersecurity and our long-range active ID and tracking. And that's what helped us kind of fine-tune and decide over the years that the proper market for us to expand into was the criminal justice industry and the tracking offender space, specifically in that industry, mainly in the U.S. and Europe.
Well, listen, I think it's an amazing, amazing deal. So so you started out as a pink sheet company, and then you moved on to the NASDAQ. Did that happen along the way?
The company was on NASDAQ at some point, and also some other markets in Europe. And then because of the financial crisis, 2008, 9, and 10, it went to the pink sheets. We came in and during the time, and after helping the company with more investors and more strategic benefits, we're able to relist on NASDAQ Capital Market.
So you recapitalized the company, and then by doing that, you were able to get it back onto the NASDAQ and get that straightened out?
Yep.
Yeah.
So yeah, the company itself was public on a few markets in Europe and the U.S. At some point, because of the financial crisis, it went down to the pink sheets, OTC essentially. And we came to the company, recapitalized it, brought new investors and new strategy. We were able to relist the NASDAQ Capital Market. That was in September of 2013. Afterwards, we raised capital and acquired some competitor, and then continued with more research and sell side activity with investment banks to raise more capital, acquire more companies, and implement our strategy essentially.
So, you know, being public is kind of a big deal. I mean, you got compliance, you've got paperwork, it costs money, you got auditors, you got all these different things happen. Has it been worth it, do you think?
I like to say yes, because even though there's a lot of work around that, because we win sometimes projects that are 5, 10 years, and you can have $30, $40, $50 million over a 10-year period, it takes a while to get the full value of that project. But when you're a public company, you can announce a project, and people expect that value, and all of a sudden you get an immediate increase in valuation to the company, which you can use to raise more capital to help you implement the growth further.
There's a lot of ways that people play the stock market game, and I'm not talking about investors, I'm talking about CEOs, that you can do the short term, kind of raise up the price, or you can just forget about the price and you can just focus on what business you're in. And it seems to me like you're focusing a lot of attention on kind of your long term growth strategy. Is that accurate? Does that seem right to you?
Yeah, especially these days. I mean, there's periods where we were very active with the sell side, and we had a lot of banks who were covering us. We were very close to investors, spending a lot of time on non-deal roadshows and interacting with them. This is more around 2014, 15, and 16, when our market cap was higher. Lately, since interest rates increased, we just had a decrease in the stock price for no clear reason, and so we've been focusing on our operations. To continue, we've been growing the business significantly over the last few years. Just a few years ago, annual revenues were $11.7 million. And now we're looking at trailing 12-month revenues of $25, $26 million.
Yeah, that's growing
in a lot of the quarters. Profitable, things are going well, but the stock doesn't necessarily show that immediately. So we're focusing on our operations, and with time, everything should align.
I mean, to me, that sounds pretty spectacular. So, what's your marketing strategy? You go to trade shows. I mean, how do you put the word out? Like, are you cold calling people? How does this work?
Yeah, we have a small sales team in the U.S. and Europe. We don't go out to talk to all the customers like some of the larger players might. But our technology is our winning strike. It's our key. In many of these tenders, like in Europe, we had over 65% win rate because we used to score very highly on the tech aspect. We put over $40 million into our tech, making sure that it's cutting edge and top of notch. And with that, we won a lot of the tenders. So when the tenders are scored, there's a big part for technology. There's prize, there's experience, and so forth. And the more experience we get together with more advanced technology we put out there, the easier it is for us to win. So originally, it was much more challenging than it is today. Now we're winning at an easier pace and larger projects. So we don't have to work as hard for the customers to know us because everyone's heard about us already in the industry.
Beside the tracking devices, do you also sell the back-end monitoring software that keeps track of what's going on?
But a full turnkey solution. So they get the bracelets, they get software that runs on the cloud, let's say a police officer is tracking 50 to 100 people, offenders at any given time. So he has a system that helps him alert if there's any problem. He doesn't have to keep track of every single one separately. They're all together and you can see where they've been, the tracking on the maps, and you put exclusion zones. Let's say they're not allowed to be in schools. You'd mark that on the map, and those offenders that are not allowed to be in schools will never enter in those areas, because if so, they get an alert. So this system, it's called Pure Monitor, a very advanced system that we developed specifically for this purpose. It was running on the cloud or on-premise for the officers, and they could see it. They also have a system that runs on their phone. There's also applications that run on the victim's phone for domestic violence. There's a lot of different features. There's the house unit, there's the phone unit, there's the ankle bracelet, there's the software on the cloud. It's the whole advanced system. We call it the Pure Security Suite that evolves with every new project that we do.
And this is all—it's all done, I would imagine, by exception. So, if somebody is not supposed to, you set up what the parameters are, and if somebody's not supposed to leave a geofence and they leave it, the bell rings and somebody's alerted. Is that how it works?
Perfect. Yeah. Geofencing. Good. You know that term. So there's the exclusion zones and the inclusion zones, and there's certain rules and structures. We have a whole. There's protocol management. We have a lot of different features and capabilities in the projects because we worked with so many different. I guess before we've done over 50 projects already. And every customer, they want different abilities, and we add that to our system. Now we can offer to new customers whatever it is they want. And if someone starts with a house arrest, they can sweet it. We won the Ministry of Justice program. After 24 years with a different incumbent, we were able to displace the incumbent and win the Ministry of Justice system. Then we won the police system, which was domestic violence. Then we won the juvenile system. In other places, we start with house arrest, and then we add domestic violence. So these are add-on modules onto the same system, and that's the beauty. Once you start with a government, it's very sticky. You could put on different projects easily.
You know, the name of the show, Your Advantage Play, we always try to kind of get to the bottom of what somebody's advantage play is, their killer strategy that makes them a great company. I've heard you talk about your technology. I mean, is that your advantage play in your mind? Is that what you think it is?
Yeah, we like to think so. Our focus on technology. Like I said, there's a big part of the scoring in these RFPs, and in that part is technology, and we win in that part, and that helps us. And when someone tries a good product and it works well and it's seamless and it's comfortable and there's not a lot of issues, they tell their colleagues in other locations around the world, this company works, technology works. And this is a very sensitive industry where tech is important because you're tracking offenders. It could be a huge risk if there's mistakes in technology, and that's how we chose to enter here. A big technology difference makes a big difference for the customer. Whereas other industries, sometimes the technology is overlooked and things fall, you know, into other aspects and other attributes that are more important, like price and commodity-based industry.
Technology is a moving target. I mean, it's kind of a tough thing to hang your hat on because it's changing all the time, and you've got this great technology now, and then 2 weeks later, somebody's they jump in front of you and they got a better technology than you. The other thing that I'm concerned about is that, you know, people buy these bracelets. These are large capital investments for these police departments or whoever's buying them. And then something changes. Do they have to get all new bracelets, or do they just upgrade the chip somehow? And now it keeps working.
Some customers like to buy the bracelets, and then if they buy them, then it's theirs. And others like to lease the bracelets. We work with both models, and lease is actually more popular. And so it contributes to our recurring revenue. Over 70% of revenues are recurring because of this lease model. And then so if they lease one type of bracelet, and then this new technology comes out with new advances, you know, going from 3G to 4G, 4G to 5G, Wi-Fi, others, then they have the newest, the latest and greatest, as they say.
And how does the leasing work? Is that, do you get a third party to buy it from you and then they lease it to the company? Or do you actually retain ownership of it?
We retain ownership of the technology and they lease it from us. So if they have 1,000 bracelets, they pay per unit per month or per unit per day. It's a different price if it's running on Fender or if it's in their warehouse. And that's how they pay for the tech.
How do you guys manage the cash flow on that? If you never really sell the bracelets and you're just collecting a monthly payment, how are you doing that? I mean, that's got to be a hardship for you.
So it's a mix. Some projects are procurement, and they buy them, and the cash comes pretty much up front or at the time of delivery. And other projects you have to manufacture, and you get cash over time. And being a public company helps in that, actually, because when we need capital, we're able to do capital raises. We're up to date on our filings. We have shelves. We're able to access the markets. We usually announce the project first, you know, get value for it. People understand what we need the money for, and then do a small capital raise to support us. And so we've been doing over the years and raised, you know, a good significant amounts of capital to help support these project implementations.
Yeah. This whole idea is just such an interesting, it's just so interesting to me. So what's on the horizon next? I mean, you guys have some new ideas, you're developing new products. I mean, you're building some new stuff. I mean, what's happening next?
Well, we just put out Pure Protect, which is our newest domestic violence platform, which we used to also win the project in Romania. Now we're expanding it to other countries in Europe. We're trying to put it into the US and the Canadian markets. We put out a brand new product called Pure One, which is a one-piece solution that's lightweight and has a mobile charger, has all these cool capabilities that others have never seen. And it was requested by our customers in the US. So until now, we focused more on Europe. Now we're focusing also on the US market, which is actually 3 to 4 times bigger than Europe. And we keep on putting out new technology. We keep working on with new customers and new resellers throughout the U.S. We just announced recently a win in Kentucky, another win in California, a win in Canada. And with our focus on the U.S., we expect to have our technology spread into more and more counties and states throughout the country.
Beside the purchase, is there also a subscription attached to it? Is there some subscription revenue that comes to you?
Yeah, even if they acquire the technology, they still have to pay for the software on the cloud and for the maintenance and support. So there's always recurring revenue. But whether if they want to own the bracelets themselves or if they lease the bracelets, either model works for us.
And just one last thing on this. These sound like they're rather industrial, criminal level kind of products. Is there a less industrial, more consumer-oriented product? I mean, maybe parents want to keep an eye on their children or their pets or something. Is there any other application?
It's funny you ask that. Our technology works also for patients and hospitals have Alzheimer's and stuff, and for children and for animals. We focus at one market at a time because we believe the margins are the best and the penetration is the strongest. When you do it that way. So we focus on this market. There's only 10 players. We have a great track record. We're able to win more and more projects rather than spread out thin to many different industries with the same technology. So once we reach significant size, and we've already grown a lot in the last, you know, in the last 2-3 years, but when we continue to grow and we just significant size, then we can start, you know, splashing over into other industries that would use the exact same technology. Even less is required, but we would use our technology, which of course, if something is, doing well tracking offenders, we hope it will be considered to do well also to track patients and animals and children where that's required. Yeah. We also use it for tracking COVID. In some countries, they wanted that throughout COVID for home compliance, you know, quarantine management. So we did that as well.
Yeah, there's probably a tremendous number of applications. Well, listen, you know, we talked about the Advantage Play and clearly your technology, the way that you've upgraded it, the way that you are continue to think about innovation. That absolutely puts you into the bucket of being an Advantage player. And we loved having you on the show and loved hearing your story. Ordan, thank you very much for sharing. And I hope you'll stay a friend of the show.
Thanks, Joel. Thanks very much. It was great talking to you. Great questions. And I like the Advantage Play concept. So hope to stay part of the community.
Very good. Well, listen, man, thanks very much.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Your Advantage Play with your host, Joel Block. To learn more about how to work with Joel and cultivate your own high-limit Advantage Plays, visit theadvantageplayer.com. Subscribe to Your Advantage Play wherever you get your podcasts.
How about a shout out and a huge thanks to our podcast show producer, David Wolf, and the team at Autovita Studios. Profit from the Inside wouldn't be possible without these wonderful professionals. To learn more or to find out how you can launch and produce your own podcast show, reach out to www.audivita.com. That's audivita.com.